Hello, everyone. It's me, Diggory, and Oscar. Say hello, Oscar.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
We have just dropping in before the episode starts to say thank you so much to everyone so far who's followed us. We've had a huge response so far. Oscar, how have you found it actually putting the podcast out there?
It's been very humbling, actually. Had lots of great responses. Didn't expect so many people to tune in. I've had people stop me on the street and say how much they love Hugh Grant. And it's been an overwhelming response, really.
It's incredible.
I had one person, Faye from Bracknell, tweet into the show saying, OMG, taking Hugh for granted is 100. I don't know how you describe that emoji, the 100 emoji.
The 100 emoji. I mean, I guess it's like, 100% max level.
Yeah, 100,
you
know, 100, 100, 100. So we're maxed out. So thanks, Faye, for listening in. Diggs, did you have any others?
Yeah, we had on the Instagram a young lady named Phoebe from High Wycombe. She said, just gave this a listen. It's absolutely brilliant. Can't wait for episode 2. So thank you so much to you, Phoebe. We also had an email from DP Dan, who said, thank you for breathing this air we share and for blessing us with your creative juices. Can't wait to listen to the show on the reg. Keep up the great work, which is really kind. Any more from you, Oscar?
I had one from Leo in Windsor, who said, what am I listening to?
Excellent. So,
you can't please everyone.
No, absolutely not.
The new episodes will be coming thick and fast over the Christmas period, so stay tuned.
Indeed. Yes, Santa's sack is full of more episodes. Also, just love and appreciation to Harry Irons, who did the cover art across all of our social platforms as well. So thank you so much to Harry. It looks amazing. A lot of people mentioned that to me as well. You can find him at harryirons.com for any sort of graphic design needs. We are going to be, I mean, you're listening to this now, so you're fine, but we are going to be going up on more and more and more and more platforms as we go on. We're talking Spreaker, we're talking Google Podcasts, and the big one, iTunes.
Bloody iTunes have been letting the side down.
Yeah, big
but
time.
We should be up there in the next week or so, we hope.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Until then, follow us on Instagram at Taking Hugh for Granted. Follow us on Facebook now at Taking Hugh for Granted as well. We're at Taking Hugh on Twitter, and email us takinghughforgranted@gmail.com.
Hope you enjoy the episode.
Cheers, guys.
For copyright reasons, the producers of Taking Hugh for Granted would like to state that this podcast is in no way associated with the actor Hugh John Mungo Grant, nor does it endorse his views or represent him in any way. We simply review Mr. Grant's films and hope to shine light upon some of the lesser-known classics from his illustrious career. Hugh, if you're listening, we hope you approve.
Listen, I did film and television studies at university for 3 years. I spent hours reading countless books and articles on subjects spanning from film all the way to television. Not a single one mentioned Hugh Grant once.
I achieved the hardest qualification across any university or college ever, a 2-1 in history. Let me tell you, the only thing that I learned was that we, as a society, have a history of denying and neglecting Hugh Grant's artistic and cultural relevance, not just in this country, but in the entire world.
I met Oscar at a Hugh Grant-themed event I put on at the Students' Union.
It felt as though Diggory and I were the only ones there. And we agreed that there was a Hugh Grant-shaped hole in academia.
We decided to put it right ourselves. We want to show people that he's an icon in acting.
We want to show people he's more than just a bumbling posh guy.
I'm Diggory Waite.
And I'm Oscar Beardmore Gray.
And this is...
Taking Hugh for Granted.
Hi there, you're listening to Taking Hugh for Granted with Diggory Waite and Oscar Beardmore Gray, the podcast in which two friends watch every single film starring Hugh Grant and ask the simple question, is this film Taking Hugh for Granted? Is this film good on its own, or does it rely on the bumbling Brit for its acclaim?
This week, The Lair of the White Worm is a 1980s horror/thriller set in rural Derbyshire, where our man Hugh Grant saves the world from a horrible mystical beast who is worshipped by an evil priestess who likes getting her kit off.
Oh, yeah. So when we were looking at doing this film, I went on IMDb. I knew nothing about this film. I scrolled straight down. I was scrolling through, and I looked at the plot keywords, Oscar. Some of these films have plot keywords. Let me just read some of them out to you now. Scantily clad female. Female exploitation. Cult film. Cleavage. It's its own thing. Topless and female nudity. So those are just some of the tags.
Was that it?
Those are the top tags on IMDb.
Yeah, so here's a little synopsis of the film, just so those listeners at home can get a feel of this absolutely shocking drama. I mean, it's called a horror film. I don't know really what to call it, because it was like a horror film, but is a thriller at the same time, drama, yeah. Comedy, I would say, as well.
Yeah.
So on a farm owned by Eve Trent and her sister Mary, young archaeologist Angus Flint, played by Peter Capaldi, discovers a large and inexplicable skull, which he soon deduces belonged to the Dampton Worm, a mythical beast supposedly slain generations ago by the ancestor of the current Lord Dampton, Hugh Grant.
Wait!
When the skull suddenly disappears, strange things start to happen. And Angus begins to suspect the bizarre and serpentine Lady Sylvia Marsh. Together with his friends Mary and Lord James Dampton, Angus sets out to destroy the horrible white worm and his evil worshippers before they make a living sacrifice of the young Virgin Eve. Ken Russell's The Lair of the White Worm.
I don't think it's going to go down as one of his best films.
Look out the window. Look out the window. Look out the window. It's Hugh Grant in a Pret.
Initial thoughts, like the first scene is, what, Peter Capaldi digging up...
Peter Capaldi looks completely different to what he does now. Yeah. I mean, obviously, this film was, what, 30 years ago. But I almost thought it was Hugh Grant. I was like, is that Hugh Grant? Because they have quite a similar look. But then I was like, that soft Scottish accent, I knew it was Peter. But it's a weird first scene. He's digging up some hole in the back garden, and then he comes across this weird snake head. And from that point on, it's going to be a weird film.
Just something about it just seemed off already. I was like, oh, this is going to be a shit film. I know straight away. I could just tell. I just felt it.
It was very low. You could tell that, like, it was quite low budget from the start, right?
Big time.
Like, it was just set in such a dreary looking scene. But I guess maybe that was meant to add to the sort of atmosphere, as it were.
Exactly. So then we'll just fast forward, because realistically, if we go too much into the idea that a student archaeologist is digging up the garden of a bed and breakfast in Derby, then there's so many problems there that we will just skip over those, because literally, what is going on there?
It's a pretty problematic film, this one. whoever came up with the idea to start with, and then whoever developed it,
exactly,
it's got to be a bit mad.
Yeah, they're all mental. Well, it gets a little bit crazier, but we'll get into that. So then I think it's good to then fast forward to the party. There's a big old party, which is it an anniversary of the slaying of this worm. So like I say, you can't stress this enough. There was a worm back, 300 years in this film. There was a worm that was slain by the lord of the area, the Lord Dampton. His ancestor, Hugh Grant, throws a party every year, or they do every year, to sort of, celebrate the worm being slain.
This is a true myth. This one,
really,
yeah. The Dampton worm, no way. It's based on a true sort of mythical creature that lived in the River Weir in Durham. That's why I was a little bit confused by this as well, because it's meant to be set in Derbyshire, but their accents were so northern. Those two girls that I was kind of, I didn't know exactly where they were meant to be. But anyway, yeah. Lord Dampton has held a sort of party for the hoi polloi at his mansion every year, and that's where obviously Hugh comes in.
Haven't you heard of the Dampton worm before?
And brave John Dampton?
Not before tonight. No, I can't say I have.
Very convenient. Welcome to Dampton Hall, Mr.
Flint. Angus Flint.
The archaeologist.
And I'm James Dampton.
The landlord.
Ah, the Dampton one of... I didn't mean... I'm sorry, I meant you must be connected.
Kel Surprise, Hugh Grant, is a lord who has a massive stately home and invites people there for a party. Surprise, surprise, everyone. If we're playing the Hugh Grant drinking game at home, you'll see straight away he's a lord. The first thing you see in him is, that, what's that, like almost Air Force-y get-up or military get-up?
Yeah, well he's, isn't he wearing a sort of black tie in the first scene?
Yeah, yeah, exactly,
that,
yeah.
He's literally wearing, he wears that exact costume in Maurice.
Yeah.
And in White Mischief.
Yeah, honestly. So, the guy, it's so classic. It's just such a look now. And he, straight away, yeah, is just chatting. He's very posh. He's a lord. Blah, blah, blah. Like, it's just Hugh Grant. We're back again. The guy is just such a staple already in his career. He's just the same character every single time. Oh, it's brilliant.
And like you said, we've hit the country home straight away. I'm so happy about that.
Exactly.
I was looking at the description of the film. I was like, I'm not sure we're going to hit the country house this one. And then it literally happens in the first scene. I was like, yes!
Come on, exactly. Oh, geez. And he was there. And he was delightfully bumbly and silly. There's two moments in this film where he does a really nice Hugh Grantism, and maybe for me his quote of the film where he said, "Welcome to Dampton Hall, Mister," and asking his name without saying what's your name. He goes, "Mister," and waits for him. He does exactly the same thing later on in the film. He's talking to Sylvia, the vixen, who we'll talk about later, and he says, she says, "Would you like some scotch?" And he said, "I'd like that." Ah, and then she says, "Sylvia."
that's actually a really good one. That sort of rise in intonation and the
yeah.
Another one I've noticed is that he says, "Yes,"
Yes, I suppose. You're so right, yeah. He just lingers on that note for ages and then starts saying what he's going to say. You're absolutely right. Oh, God, it's so good. But I don't think, at least in that opening scene, you're not going to be disappointed with the Hugh Grant-isms. They're there in abundance. So then, look, the party happens. Everyone has a good time. Then Peter Capaldi and Mary walk home, and it's our first inkling that this is a scary movie, because, you know, they start talking about no one walks this way home because it's all dark. And she's very flippantly tells Peter Capaldi that her parents went missing on that same very road a year ago, and that's why no one goes there. And then Peter Capaldi goes, "Oh, that's a shame," and starts getting with her. It's the most bizarre moment where you think, I'll tell you what, Oscar, there are loads of like sexy or at least attempting to be sexy moments in the film, and that's probably, and then that's like one of the only kisses we see. Well, that's not true, but that's a kiss that you're just like, there's been no sexy lead up to it. It's like, oh, your parents are missing and probably dead, should we get off?
There's a lot of moments in this film like where there is like sort of sex that happens that you're just like, is out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this is so strange.
It's brilliant. And once again, it just, from what we can tell so far, I really feel like being a posh character, being in a stately home, and copious amounts of very graphic and hardcore sex seem to litter Hugh Grant's early career. It's just... It's sexy films...
I don't know. After I discussed the film, I was thinking about this yesterday. Is that nowadays people talk about their sex lives, relationships, etc., a lot more openly than they did in the sort of 1980s or whatever, and therefore that kind of chat was expressed in film a lot more than it was in society, and none other than the elite who would, you know, never talk about that stuff, even though it was definitely going on. And then, so you see all these absolutely like bizarre films come out where like there's orgies and there's like all kinds of weird things with toys and that kind of stuff. And you're like, this is really, really left the field. And I'm not sure I'd want my child to watch this.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
No, I think you're right, Oscar.
So they've had the party.
and they've mentioned that their parents went missing. Angus is Peter Capaldi, unearths this head of a large snake. Now we're introduced to Lady Sylvia Marsh, who is part of, what's her house? Oh, Temple House is the name of her
Temple
house. And she's
aptly named.
She sneaks into their house while everyone's out and steals the skull. But very importantly, and up until this point, nothing really too weird has happened. She sneaks into the house, steals the skull. How she knows it's there, we're not sure. But she sees a crucifix on the wall. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, she sprouts fangs and spits and hisses some noxious sort of, you know, weird gunk at it. Mary, one of the ladies who owns the house, comes in and sees this on the wall and goes to touch it. Oscar, what the fuck happens next?
It's probably, if you had to do a short list of the worst acting of the century, this would be quite high up. She suddenly has this like weird trance, and she sort of like, her eyes go manically wide, and then she sort of like goes into, well, okay, she yeah. like falls on the ground in a really terrible piece of acting, and then go, and then this is when the film really, like, this is the first bit of the film I was literally like, what the hell am I watching? This is so weird. It goes into this dream, or like kind of trance, I guess, where there's some, is it Jesus on the cross?
I think it is.
Jesus on the cross, but the layer of the white worm is twisted around it. And then there's a load of Romans raping people underneath the cross. And then the snake, like, starts eating the hand of Jesus. And it's, like, this weird, weird pagan... Like, there's so many thoughts running through your head. I know what thoughts are running through your head, Degree. It was crazy, though.
The background is set alight. It's on fire. But, like, weird colours. Not just, like, fire. It's, like, psychedelic fire. Yeah, she basically has, like, a psychedelic trip, almost. But, like you say, it's a really distressing scene. All you can hear in it is the basilisk hissing, fire also crackling away, and women screaming because they're being raped. And it's the weird, it's just absolutely crazy. And it's an assault on all the senses. And it's absolutely horrible. May I also, that is the moment when I was screaming. I was literally going, no, what is going on? And then I had to open the door to the postman, and he was looking at me, and I had this like incredulous grin on my face, which I know is probably really dark, but I was like, because I was like, what have I just seen? This film just suddenly goes from 0 to 60 in literally the space of touching a crucifix. It's mental. It goes crazy.
And then you have the contrast of when Hugh then comes upstairs and he's like, oh, good grief. What's happened, Eve? Let me help you. Tell me what's happened. And you're like, you have no idea, Hugh. You have no idea what's just happened. This poor girl has just seen probably the most shocking and distressing moment of her entire life.
Yeah, of my entire life as well. Bloody hell. It's mental. It's absolutely mental. Then we're instantly... basically hit up again with another mental bit. Lady Sylvia is driving home with the head of this snake, this like bone head of the snake in her car.
I'm just covering my hands because I just remembered what we're about to talk about.
Yeah.
And it's just the weird thing about this bit as well is that it has absolutely no bearing on the ending of the film. It's like the producers have just decided we would like to make this really weird.
Yeah, exactly. This is meant, there's just no, you're so right. This has no bearing on the rest of it. It's brilliant. So there is a young man who is hitchhiking, and she pulls up beside him, and he's like, hello, missus. Can you take me to the youth hostel, please? And she's like, oh, it's raining. You'll catch a cold. Get in my car. And then whilst they're driving, she's talking about her music, and he's like, oh, I don't like this banging. She was like, do you like any kind of banging? And it's just, and it goes from there, basically.
And then pulls up her skirt, and you can see she's wearing, like, fishnets.
Yeah. Oh,
and you're
God.
Like, oh. Okay, and then I'll summarise to the audience, like, the shocking scene that happens next.
Mm, mm.
So that they go back to her house, and, you know, she's like, what did she say? She's like, you know, the fun's only just starting or something.
Yeah.
And then they're playing Snakes and Ladders again, the weird snaky theme continues. And then they go for a bath.
Yeah. Oh god. Oh god.
And she and throughout all this, she's like wearing like literally like just
next to nothing.
Yeah, literally next to nothing, which is also out of absolutely nowhere.
Yeah.
She takes his clothes off, asks him to stand up in the bath, then goes downstairs, and then...
My, you are a fine growing boy.
Out the fangs come, and she bites his dick off. And that's basically the last we see of him. And do you know what's really disturbing about this, Oscar? Is like when we are trying to look for a little bit of insider info, when we're editing these, we like to, you know, Oscar had the fantastic idea and we put in little clips from the films. On YouTube is often the best way to get those. I went on YouTube, typed in this film. You can't find many other scenes. You find lots of trailers. The one scene about 1,000 people have uploaded is this scene. Is the scene with the boy. And I must tell you now, Oscar, the comments are disgusting. They are absolutely filthy.
Have you got some?
YouTube user Stuart Lynch said, I remember my parents having this on VHS when I was about 12. I would always sneak it on when they weren't home, just for this very scene. User Don Franco says, I was in the Scouts.
And I never remembered it being this good.
Jason Bardell says, that's my fancy, being seduced by a sexy MILF. Oh well, I can carry on dreaming. User Black Pill agrees, simply commenting, classy English MILF. And Attila 709 says, saw this movie years ago, and all I can remember is how sexy this woman was. Love to taste all of her nasties. Smiley face.
Oh god, the internet is a twisted place, isn't it? There's probably someone who's like uploaded that to Pornhub or something.
Big time.
This is for those weird people who get off on this shit, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. And I can't recommend the film enough for them. But
yeah, if you're listening in, this is the one for you. Exactly. If you like kind of slightly out there stuff.
Yeah, exactly, big time. But she's about to fully give him away, but then our boy Hugh Grant, James Dampton, bloody rings the doorbell and she has to go upstairs. Anyway, he's there to get rid of a snake. That's by the by. Some snake has bitten someone on her grounds. That doesn't really matter to the story. But they have an interesting conversation. And again, it's kind of sexy. And I think he leaves. And they have a kiss just before he leaves.
They have a very naughty kiss. Is this the first time that Hugh cheats on someone in a film that we've watched? Might well be. I think so. But I don't know if it's official with him and Eve. So that's why it's a bit confusing. But exactly. I was like, you naughty fella.
Yeah, exactly.
He's looking pretty dashing in his RAF uniform, though, to be fair.
He certainly is. That's the thing. And it's him. He's come in. She's off in the scotch. She's wearing next to nothing, as we've already said. But also the thing about her next to nothing is it's leather next to nothing. It makes a massive racket. Her legs must be boiling.
I know.
Anyway, so that's mental. But nothing really happens there other than... For me, anyway, yeah, it's a bit peak because Hugh Grant kisses this woman and you know, he's cheating. You know, he's a cheater. It's not on Hugh.
Hugh, you've just gone down in my estimations there.
So then Eve and Mary find out that their dad's pocket watch is discovered in the Stone Rich caverns.
Yes, something like that.
Yeah, but which
some spooky sounding... place.
Exactly. And they lie beneath Temple House where Lady Sylvia resides. Coincidence? Perhaps.
I think not.
Hugh goes to bed and has another weird dream sequence occurs.
Oh Oscar? My word. if there weren't enough weird scenes in this film, this is probably the weirdest of the lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And yeah, big time.
It's probably, you know what, I mean, we're obviously yet to watch all the rest of his films, but this is probably going to be up there with Hugh Grant's most bizarre scene in his whole filmography.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you want to run through it, or should I run through this one? Because I need to brace myself before.
Yeah, brace yourself for the hard landing. We can maybe piece it together as one. So this is why I thought he was in some, like, you know, pilot getup, because that's what it looks like. So he gets on a he's dreaming now. He gets on a plane, and he sat there. The flight attendants attending to him, and it's all fine. The two people are also on the plane, and they're strapped down. They are Eve and Mary's parents, and who are supposed to be
killed.
Yeah, they were killed. They're missing. They're dead, and they're being fed, like, you know, some brandy or something. Then one of a new flight attendant comes over. Is this right?
And well, I mean, the flight attendants are Eve, Sylvia, and Mary.
Ah, right. Because then Sylvia comes in.
Yeah, so then Sylvia comes in.
And then what does she do? I can't remember.
And starts sort of getting it on.
She gets her leg out.
Starts flashing her leg around. Like, you know in a plane where there's, like, you know, the different sections of the plane, and you're going to go through. She starts, like, sticking her leg round, and he, like, starts flashing a lot of it, and then sort of comes over to Hugh. And then she, like, gives Hugh something to drink, which, again, looked like brandy. Then suddenly he's tied up. And then Sylvia starts, like, humping Eve on the floor. And
they start having a fight.
Your face.
They start having a fight. Yeah, I know.
Your face is just brilliant. It's just like,
so yeah. So it's Eve and Sylvia, yeah. But they start, like, they're not happy with each other, and they start fighting. And it's this film, so not only are they dressed very, you know, I guess the word they're using is scantily, but also they're flight attendants, and they start, like, fighting on the floor. And then Sylvia, like, sort of straddles Eve. We keep cutting back to Hugh Grant's pen, a real close-up of his pen, which has a bright red tip. And the pen, as this fight goes on, just starts lifting up and up and up. And it's not like we're focusing on the pen. No. This is a shot. It's a close-up on the pen. It keeps cutting back to the pen. It's a clear
innuendo.
Metaphor. Indeed, yeah. And
because when I watched it, the scene finished, and I was just like, was that an innuendo? And why? Like, there's nothing. There was nothing. Why is that happened? Like, there's no need for it.
That's the thing, because it's like, you kind of want there to be a reason to why he's turned on when they're fighting, but at no point is that returned to, and at no point is that purposeful. It's just, he's just sat there and gone, this is fit, and that's it.
Yeah, well, so we now know that Hugh's into lesbian shit, so that's cool.
But also, not even lesbian shit, but, like, lesbian shit where they're, like, trying to fight and they're attacking, kill each other. It's like, what is going on?
Stab me, oh, stab me. Stab me if you think that you've heard this one before.
Stop. We've heard it before.
So then Eve is captured. But this is what I'm saying. This is what we're talking about with those dream sequences and that moment where the kid gets his dick bitten off. These are moments that don't really hold any weight on the story. And then it's at this moment, Eve is captured, and James suddenly just pieces about 1,000 things together and then just basically works everything out and then goes, right, I'm setting a trap. Didn't you find that really, like, whoa, 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 this is really, it's not feasible at all that you'd work all that out?
No, this is, it's almost like they sort of ran out of time in telling this narrative, because the film's relatively short, it's an hour and a half. And then suddenly it's like, okay, we need to end this now. How is Hugh Grant going to save the day?
Yeah. So then he sort of works it all out. They put some massive KRK rocket speakers on the roof, which is so weird. And they they start playing, you know, some sort of charming music. And so then
Serpent Charming.
Yeah, Serpent Charming music. So then Sylvia starts walking out of her house, and then Mary and Peter Capaldi go sneak in behind her, so then they go into her house to see what's up. Mary's bitten by her mum, who is still alive, but she's now a serpent lady. And then doesn't she immediately then somehow transport all the way to Hugh's house and then sneak into Hugh's house and try and kill Hugh? Or was that the same person?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, yeah. The mum. Yeah, somehow. It's strange because you think that the charming music should attract Sylvia, but in fact attracts the mum of Eve and Mary. And then, yeah. And then Hugh has to... Hugh gets...
Yes.
Such a good moment. Gets the sword and slays this person, cutting her in half, and then it, like, disintegrates on the floor. It's like a kind of Stranger Things,
yeah,
but far worse animation. Like, this sort of... It she melts into some kind of paste. Hugh looks good with a sword, I can tell you that.
He looks great with a sword, yeah. The lights all go out of the place. This serpent lady comes in. He grabs the first thing he finds, which happens to be a sword. She jumps up and slices her in half. It's amazing. So then it's suddenly the next day, and Mary's been at home. Which, this is what I'm saying, the film just suddenly speeds up out of nowhere, and you're like, well, get rid of biting that kid's dick off, and let's spend some more time explaining what happens at the end. So it's the next day, Mary goes, the policeman's outside Mary's house, and the policeman's like, oh, we need you to come and examine your mum's body just to say who it is. We're going to stop up at Sylvia's house, because we're going to bring her in for questioning. And you think... And you think, hang on a minute, stop at Sylvia's house. I wonder what's going to happen there. They drive up to Sylvia's house, and, oh, she sees the policeman has two bite marks in his neck or something. He chases her down the hall. She's running away, and she stopped in her tracks. There's a massive snake in front of her. What's she going to do? She turns around. There's the policeman, serpent man. She turns around again. There's a massive snake. What's she going to do? What happens?
Peter Capaldi comes and saves the day with his bagpipes. And I honestly think he was only casted in this thing because he was Scottish and therefore had to play the bagpipes.
Yep.
And then the bagpipe music obviously is sort of throws all the serpent-y stuff into a trance.
Mm.
And then there's just really, really great scene, which will go down in history, or has gone down in history, surely, where Peter Capaldi is being chased around this ancient mansion by the policeman with fangs. Playing the bagpipes as he goes. And you couldn't make this shit up, honestly. It's absolutely hilarious.
For me, the best part of that scene isn't that they, like you say, have clearly cast Peter Capaldi because he's Scottish. He's somehow got his bagpipes out and brought them all the way to the policeman's house. But also, he can't just play the bagpipes and be Scottish. Oh, no. He's in full Scottish garb. He's wearing a fucking kilt. Even when he was at the party at the Lord's house, he wasn't wearing a kilt. He literally is just wearing the kilt just because he's got the bagpipes out. It's bizarre. It's almost like you can't play the bagpipes and have a kilt on. There's no way.
And he's even got the, you know, the little bag thing. I can't remember what it's called, but the thing that you know, out of ferret or whatever it is on the front.
Yeah, that you got right where your crotch is. Yeah.
Anyway, and then he obviously... You lose your breath after playing the bagpipe for so long, so he momentarily loses it. And then... Mm. Does he get bitten at that point?
He does get bitten. He does get bitten. But he has... that's how it happens. Yeah, Sylvia has earplugs in. So she gives him a bite, takes him out and goes, you're fucked. Smash cut to in her evil lair. Eve...
The labyrinth.
Yeah, exactly, her labyrinth. Mary's tied up against the wall. Angus, Peter Capaldi, is on the floor with his head bashed in and stuff. He's not dead, but he's close to.
And he's like frothing in the mouth.
Exactly. And Eve is in white underwear only. And she's tied up, but like hanging over this massive hole that is a massive worm-shaped hole. Oh, dear. Mm. That has just a slight bit of, you know, eerie smoke stuff coming out of it.
And the idea is that she's going to be sacrificed because Sylvia is sort of believes in this pagan spirit and worships the worm.
Yeah,
it's a bit of a waste of time, I'd say, to worship this weird worm.
Exactly, and we have to talk about it again. We can't not. Part of this ritual is, oh God, Sylvia's wearing a massive dildo. That's part of the ritual, is it not?
Yeah, it's just... I'm running out of words.
I know. You can't write this shit. You can't write it. And she's about to... Part of the reason she's so infatuated with Eve is because Eve is a virgin, right? And she wants to do this properly. She wants to give the worm a virgin. And I think the part of it is you know, taking the virgin's virginity with your massive
strap-on. It's really spiky as well.
It's horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And it's massive. It's bloody massive. Luckily, we're spared that, though, because time's running out, because she hears Hugh Grant, who realizes the worm will be down there. He's gone in, exactly. He's gone under Temple House, and he's gone to with his friends. They're trying to smoke out the worm. But all that does is the worm starts rising up, opens its mouth.
And then Peter Capaldi suddenly comes back to life, and you're like, how the hell has that happened? Then you find out he's had the antidote. He saves the day. Pushes our poor dear Sylvia into the worm, which opens his mouth, looks like a stuffed toy.
Yes.
The animation's so terrible. Mm. Honestly, it looks like the kind of thing that like a group of year ones made in arts and crafts.
And then he pulls that grenade from out of his...
Oh, shit, yeah.
In the little pouch in his kilt. So he's brought the bagpipes, he's brought the kilt, he's brought a fucking grenade, chucks the grenade down the worm's mouth, that explodes, flesh goes everywhere. And then it's sort of just, did we not just then just cut straight to those two driving home?
Pretty much, I mean, and then you have, you know, the classic horror film afterthought for the sequel, that never happened, shockingly.
Exactly, this is embarrassing. Do you know what? This bit of the film, the rest of it you can kind of get away with. This is embarrassing. Peter Capaldi then gets a phone call, right? And he's used his antidote on himself and on Mary, I think, or Eve at this point, one of the two of them. And he gets this phone call from the lab, and they go, "Hi there, sorry to bother you. There's actually been a mix-up. Your antidote was mixed with arthritis liquid or whatever that's meant to alleviate arthritis. So unfortunately your antidote's here. I'm holding it right now. Sorry about that. Anyway, cheers." And so, which I think, I'm sorry,
is a major flaw in the plot, because how the hell has he got up from, how has he recovered from his snake bite to then save the day, because he was meant to have the antidote and then the antidote actually wasn't the antidote? It makes no sense.
So they're driving along. Our boy realises, he looks in the mirror and starts licking his lips in a
He says a great line as well. He's like, "Should we get a bite to eat?"
Yeah.
And then you're like, ooh, bite.
Indeed. And then... Does Hugh work it out?
He gives a little glance, doesn't he? And he's like, hmm. And obviously then you never find out. And to be honest... I'm glad we never find out.
I'm glad we never find out.
An hour and a half of that shit was enough for me in one evening.
I'm the absolute opposite. I wanted more, because the film was so rushed and because it was so ridiculous. I was like, I want more.
Taking you for granted. Taking you for granted. Taking you for granted. What did you think, lads? Were they taking you for granted?
If you ask me right now, is this film taking you for granted? I'll say 110% no. What a fun, ridiculous, mental thrill ride.
Well, I think it's just one of those films that you just don't... Hugh in his later career would never accept doing.
Nope.
And a film like that probably wouldn't be made anymore.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's an absolute gem in all the films that he's done. Mm. And while his character is not that developed and it's a little bit... I don't know. It's just... You're not riveted whenever he's on screen, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
But it is a hilarious film, and definitely not taking it for granted in this one.
Exactly. Big time.
It's been the greatest entertainment so far by quite some distance, and I'm not sure we're going to beat it.
Genuinely, like, so far, I would give this my stamp of approval.
Well, yeah, you don't see these kind of films in modern cinema anymore. It's just not what you expect to see when you go to work in the morning.
Exactly. That's it. Well, I guess because it's the Halloween episode, I've got to ask, did it scare you at all?
I'm a bit of a pussy when it comes to horror films, I will admit. Diggory, you know this fuel well. I will watch
I do.
Any kind of horror films through my fingers like this and just like peep. So yeah. I will admit there were a few moments in this film where I had my hands like this. So I guess I was scared. That's probably a bit embarrassing to admit.
Oh, I want to watch it again. I might watch it again really soon. Oh God, good stuff.
That'd be a good like a weird first date. Like, let's go back to my house and watch this film. I don't think you'd be getting a second one if you did that.
Absolutely not. But that's a good way, maybe. Okay, here's our top tip. If you're stuck on a date that you don't want to be on, take them back to your place, bear with us, and stick this film on. They will leave, or if they don't leave, they will definitely never see you ever, 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 ever again.
They'll probably call the police. So yeah. Thank us when you've got rid of the person you didn't want to hang out with that evening.
Exactly. And then when you use your one phone call from jail, ring us and thank us. And say, thank you so much. She did call the police on me, but I got away from her. Fantastic stuff. Well, that's another episode in the bag, I imagine. Thank you so much for listening. Anything else to say? Any closing thoughts?
Just thank the Lord every day that you have this man in your lives.
Thank the Lord. Cheers, everyone.
See ya.